getting to our guest, I was able to talk to Ron for a little bit before the show, and I think you're really going to like him. He came on a few years ago with Joyce and talked about property rights. Ron Ewart from National Association of Rural Landowners, NARLO.org, NARLO, N-A-R-L-O.org. Ron, welcome back to the Power Hour.
Thank you very much. I appreciate coming back.
Yes, very good to have you. NARLO.org, it's kind of got a funny sounding name, but give us a little bit of background on the website, your organization, and how you got involved.
Sure. About 2004, we were involved in a new ordinance that the King County, which includes Seattle, was trying to pass, but it only affected rural landowners, and we challenged it by both written testimony and oral testimony and multiple public hearings. And essentially what it was, one of the major onerous part of that ordinance was that they were going to literally law off 65% of your property upon which you could do nothing and without paying you a cent, which came in violation of the Fifth Amendment. And so in our challenge, we cited all kinds of law and property rights and constitutional law, as many others did. The upshot of it was the 7 Democrats on the 13-member commission council passed it. They had every reason to pass it. Even with all the testimony, they were going to put it through no matter what. And what we found in the process was that these kind of ordinances were going on in counties all over the United States, especially in rural areas, but more especially in rural areas right next to large urban cities. And we realized that the rural landowners in those areas were totally disenfranchised from the process. And so we decided that somebody needed to be an advocate for rural landowners. We established the National Association of Rural Landowners in 2005 and incorporated in 2006. And we are well known throughout the United States, partly from our website, which is a voluminous website with all kinds of information for rural landowners on it, as well as a weekly column that we write. We've written well over 500 articles in the last 13 years on freedom, liberty, and property rights. And from that basis, we are, as I said, well known throughout the United States. We offer products and services for the rural landowner, as well as being an advocate for them in cases where they have no advocacy. And that's pretty much how we got. Go ahead.
Well, let's start with a little bit of your description. I want to go backwards. You said that, talk about rural, especially outside these major cities in America, the rural land directly outside is being controlled by ordinances, these onerous type things. In America, one time, 100 years ago or so, the percentage of population was heavily weighted towards rural. Now, 2018, it's heavily weighted towards urban type development. We've seen a complete shift, and people seem to have forgotten what it means to even live on rural land. That rural land is being now taken and encroached by government officials. That's what basically the premise of your whole organization is, that it's being encroached and you're trying to stop it. Let's talk about some of these specific issues. Let's just get down to brass tacks here. Tell us some of the situations that have been going on and what the things that your organization deals with.
Well, first of all, we provide services to landowners to protect them from the encroachment by local ordinances and state ordinances and federal ordinances. People don't realize that their first line of defense is their property line. And without it being adequately signed with no trespassing signs, which we do provide, their property is unprotected. We also provide advice to people who have different kinds of land use issues. We also provide a handbook which is designed specifically for rural landowners. And information is our greatest strength. And most rural landowners are literally not aware of what their rights are. So that's the other thing we try to do is to inform them about those rights.
Property rights is so sacred. It was mentioned in the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of happiness was the ability to own and to use property and to accumulate property. That's what the Founding Fathers defined it as. What are some of those rights, or what are some things that we don't know? What is it that we need to know?
Well, originally, the right of property was what they called an allodial right. That means it was a sovereign right, that the state did not have any or could not exercise power over those rights. Your land, as people said, was your castle, and it was inviolate, it was private, and then it could not be intruded upon by intruders or government. That has changed over time. And it changed dramatically in the late 1960s with the passage of the National Environmental Policy Act. From that, a whole series of environmental laws were passed that started seriously encroaching on those rights. And the Supreme Court did not help. In one of their decisions, they said that in order for there to be a taking by government, the taking had to be as much as 95% of the use of the property before a taking and compensation would be triggered. 95%, you might as well take it all. And so these land use ordinances that have exploded since the late 1960s, and please let me preface this with, I'm not against protecting the environment, but protecting the environment and trashing the Constitution at the same time are equal or mutually exclusive. And so because of the fact that most people were not aware of the fact that they actually had rights of property, but those rights had to be open and notorious by the installation of no trespassing signs. So in 2005, we created a very powerful 18-inch by 24-inch no trespassing sign that had constitutional implications in it. And that essentially one of the major constitutional implications was that to come on my property or your property with this sign posted, you had to have a Fourth Amendment warrant, and that land use regulations were not a valid reason to come on the property. That was our first no trespassing sign. Then we learned recently in the last couple of years that the U.S. Supreme Court passed two ordinances or two decisions that gave the right of government agents and law enforcement to come on your property. They had an implied license to come on your property and knock and talk to you, knock on your door and talk to you. And signage made no difference. So in 2016, the Tenth Circuit Court had a trespass case before them, and the upshot of that case was that the landowner had the right to revoke the implied license that government agents and law enforcement had to come on your property, but it had to be done with proper signage. So we created a revocation of implied license no trespassing sign that is a companion to our large no trespassing sign. It has to be posted at the entrance. It's posted at the entrance to your property. Go ahead if you have something else.
Fantastic. We're coming out of break. There's the music. I know sometimes it's hard to hear the music there. We'll get right back to that when we come on the other side of the break. This implied license, where did they get the implied license to begin with? And then let's talk more about your signs. I'm fascinated by this. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. ThePowerHour.com. There's so many discussions like this. Even we saw it with Kavanaugh and socialist, communist takeover tactics. This is a brain. This is to teach you, ladies and gentlemen. This is a mind control discussion tactic that's used. And Ron kind of made me aware of it by earlier what he said. Okay, in the Kavanaugh situation, the discussion goes from, did Kavanaugh abuse this lady Ford? Did she? Yes or no? Now the discussion is not even that. It's that now the discussion is, well, all women should be believed. Well, all women get abused. White people should take the... You see, the goalposts keep getting moved to where we're not even approaching the topic at hand. And then when you finally do actually get there to the question, it's like you gotta go with kid gloves. It's like, I'm sorry, Mrs. Ford. Would you please... You know what I mean? And it's the same thing with him talking about environment. He said, well, let me preface. I just feel it's necessary for me to say I'm not against the environment. You see how that discussion with the environment, and they push, oh, I guess you're against endangered turtles, or Clive and Bundy, you're against that spotted tortoise that is there roaming around in the red dirt. So you got to give up your cows. Well, you must be against the environment. You see how they push the goalposts, push the discussion? That's a mind control tactic. It is a communist tactic, just so you know, just letting you know. You don't have to preface anything here, Ron. You just say your feelings and say, especially if you're going to speak about rights and constitution here, that's supreme. That's God's work, and that's what we're doing here. We don't give a damn about the tortoise, at least not in that context. So just thought I'd throw that out there, Ron.
I appreciate that. I think that I also added to my conversation about that was that we do believe in protecting the environment, but we don't believe in trashing the Constitution to do it. And that is Amen. The distinction that I'd like to make.
Amen. Amen. Let's get back to, you brought up a really important point of police knock and talk. Wherever you live, police have an implied license. That's what pretty much has been accepted, that they come on your property, they can knock on your door and ask you questions. Where did they first get that license and then hit that home about taking that away?
In 1951, there was a case that came before the Supreme Court called Breard versus Alexander, in which they actually talked. Now, I haven't read the total case, but and they talked about the ability of the law enforcement and government agents to come on your property, as any other individual might come on your property, such as the driver of the UPS truck or the mailman or that sort of thing. But it gave an extra implied license to government agents and law enforcement. The second case was Florida versus Jardines, which occurred in 2013, which again reinforced the implied license of government agents and law enforcement to come on your property, knock on the door, and talk to you. Now, you're not required to talk to them, but they do have that implied license to come up on your front porch and knock on the door. And by the way, this is a warning I want to give to all people out there. If law enforcement comes up to your door and your kid opens the door, please instruct your children not to give any information to law enforcement or government agents at all, because they will essentially pump the kid for information, and they can trip you up. And I'm not saying
that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what does daddy have in the basement, Timmy? Timmy, what's going on in the basement?
How many guns do you have in the house? But in any event, in 2016, the Tenth Circuit Court had, as I said earlier, had this case before them about signage versus the implied license. And in the decision, they said that the landowner had the right to revoke that implied license, but it had to be open and notorious notice, that is, by signage. And there has to be one out on the entrance to the property and one on or next to the house. And that was actually language that was in the Tenth Circuit Court decision. All of that information is on the implied license page of our website.
Well, let's talk about those signs. We're coming on a break, short segment. They can go on narlo.org, and then what will they click on to find these signs? Because I think I'm going to get one of these signs.
There are two places on the home page. Over on the right-hand side, down just a little bit, you will see a small picture of a no trespassing sign. That'll take you to the big ones. Then you go down a little bit farther on the home page, and you'll find the implied license image. Click on that. That'll take you to the implied license page.
went perfect. When did we get to the point? I mean, we're coming on a break on the other side. So much more to talk about. Specific case, the Hage case in Nevada, near where Clive and Bundy was. We'll talk about Clive and Bundy. These are so important, ladies and gentlemen. This is the core of our republic. Is your individual ability to be sovereign and to own things. I mean, socialists don't want that. You see why this is so crucial. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Talking to Ron Ewart from the NARLO.org is the website. I love saying that. The NARLO.org, the National Association of Rural Landowners. This seems like, Ron, this seems like the fight of the century. We've heard things like Agenda 21. Agenda 2030, what the United Nations. I mean, for years and years, people were called nuts, nutcakes, the kooks, whatever word you want to insert. But from your experience, you're right on the front line of this. These bodies, unelected from America, are using their influence on our soil to take our property. And this is not made up nonsense. This is for real, isn't it?
It is. And it's also internationally driven. The Agenda 21 Earth Summit took place in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro, and out of it came a policy paper, and I think it was 190 nations signed off on it, and one of those signers was George H.W. Bush, President of the United States. And the Agenda 21 has worked its way into the law. Not by treaty, not by debate, not by ratification of a treaty. It just appeared out of nowhere. The American Planning Association has adopted Agenda 21 policies. The President Clinton actually created some kind of a commission on, sustainable development. And so this thing has filtered into the law, it's filtered into our school systems and our colleges, and we are being brainwashed, literally, by what you say is environmentalism is sacrosanct, and that it is tearing away and eroding the property rights that about several million men fought for and died for. And we have an entire page on our website on Agenda 21.
You said it came into being procedurally, what have you. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe clarify. It just came out of nowhere. It just started to be inserted into counties or cities, or how did that happen?
Well, remember what I said, that the National Environmental Policy Act was passed in 1969. Shortly thereafter, yes, we got the Endangered Species Act, and we got the Environmental Protection Agency, and a whole series of agencies that deal with the environment. That filtered all the way down to the local level, where ordinances for land use and environmental protection were passed, including the one that got us started in 2004, which was called the Critical Areas Ordinance, where they ruled off 65% of your property and you couldn't do anything with it, which is a taking by any name.
Now, the most famous case probably of BLM overreach is the Clive and Bundy case, but it may not even be the most important there in that area. The Hage case was unbelievable. Let's talk about that Hage case near there.
That is really fascinating because it's been now about 25, 27 years ago that the BLM and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife sent in riders, horse riders, and rounded up Wayne Hage's cattle on a government allotment which was a legal contract with the government to graze their stock and use the water on the allotment. They then sold those cattle at auction in total violation. They literally eliminated the contract that the Hages had with the government. And these contracts or these allotments were all over the United States with cattlemen and sheep ranchers. And it was almost a symbiotic relationship. years ago where the government and the cattlemen and the sheepmen worked together to use government land to graze cattle. And this was similar to the Bundy case, by the way. But along came environmentalism, as we mentioned earlier, and it began to take over the government agencies. So the with the endangered passage of the Endangered Species Act, all of a sudden, this land that the government owned, which is about, I think it's around 80% of the entire western United States, suddenly became havens for endangered species and other animals. And then they tried, or are still trying, to set up corridors between our national parks and the government land, which means they want to drive the cattlemen, the sheepmen, off of all the land. And that is their goal, is to drive them off of the land. And that set up...
Now, well, let me pause right there. You just said a huge statement. You said it is their goal to drive all private cattlemen off their land. That's, I mean, you're not just pulling that out of a hat. Please clarify that. Why are you saying that? That is such a bold statement.
Well, it is. It's a true statement because the land that the government owns has now become an environmental sanctuary where the private landowner has no rights to either walk on. Some of these lands, there is no human public access at all. They literally close it off. The goal, driven by this radical environmental cult that is out there, that has infiltrated all of the government agencies, and that is to hold out all government land as environmental sanctuaries. And that's why these allotments for grazing and water rights are being eliminated one by one. The Bundy Ranch was a similar one. The Hage Ranch, which is now, let's see, the battle is well over 20 years. The Wayne Hage, the elder Wayne Hage and his wife, went after the government in court in the U.S. Court of Claims. And eventually, after, I don't know, it was something like 15, 18 years, they won a $14 million settlement out of the U.S. Court of Claims. Wayne Hage and his wife died before they saw any money. So the son, Wayne Hage Jr., took up the battle. The government has been instrumental in delaying, and by the way, if you hear the word delay, does that ring a bell to what's going on with Kavanaugh? They've delayed it to the point where Wayne Hage Jr. has said, I'm not fighting them anymore, and has sold his 7,000-acre cattle ranch. So they won.
Oh, my gosh. Let me clarify something. You know, you said, I agree with you completely. I'm not disagreeing with you, that environmentalists took over, whatever. It's not that environmentalists took over. It's socialists, communists took over under the guise of environmentalism. These are communists. This is a communist. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, how else would you describe it? We're coming on a break on the other side. I sat right there in Clive and Bunny's living room. He told me the story about some chicken neck little control freak in a uniform and a badge going on his land on his cattle and said, had the audacity to hand him a ticket and say, your cattle stepped on grass that the spotted tortoise needs to eat. I'm giving you a ticket. That's how all that started. True. We'll get that on the other side. Stay tuned. Yeah, Bundy said that BLM agent came to his house, gave him a ticket, and he called the sheriff immediately. Sheriff came down, and he asked the sheriff, does he have the right to stay on my property and to give me the ticket if I don't want him here? And he said, no, not really. He said, well, then get the... You know, the insert the word, get out. He said, get out. And that's how that all started. That's how that whole thing started. And even further disturbing, going along with what Ron said, in that case, his case, right around that same time, the BLM at one time, they became the organizers of the grazing rights. Then they became the stewards. Then they became the managers of the grazing rights, just to keep them all straight. Then, in his case, or right around that time, Hayes' case, they said, no, we own the land. It is a complete takeover, ladies and gentlemen. We have no idea. Ron, you've been writing about this for 30 years. 13 years, excuse me. You've been writing about this. And obviously something alarmed you to begin with. I mean, you were ahead of the curve, certainly. Your organization, narlo.org, is the website. In that 13 years, are you less concerned or are you more concerned? I mean, what's going on?
Well, I'm even more concerned. And if you think that Rush Limbaugh has been on the air spouting somewhat of the same ideas that all conservatives have, and it's only gotten worse, I am probably but a flea on the back of an elephant in terms of my audience. But when you see when over 2 million people voted for Bernie Sanders and they were all young, you begin to get an idea that this mindset that has been embedded in the body politic across the whole spectrum, but mostly in large urban centers, how do you overcome that with just the vote? And you can't. There has to be other methods to do it without going to war.
Well, let's talk about solutions. I know your organization's got some ideas. I think they're good ones. Why don't you talk about them?
Well, the one idea which we just launched about 3-4 weeks ago is that, as I said, this whole thing is a mindset. If you can't change the mindset, you can't change the path that America is on. So our goal is to get 1 million people. And 1 million people is about 0.3% of the population. And for them to be motivated and dedicated to a plan to change the mindset. And in this day of social media and advertising, television advertising, where you can reach 1 million people in a second, our plan is definitely workable with a whole series of advertisements that embellish the foundation of America. And you just slow but surely build that advertising up to the point where it is almost ubiquitous. It appeared, gee, where I saw that ad, yes, just 5 minutes ago or an hour ago. Gee, that's a great ad. And you start changing people's minds. And the parents see them, and they then relay it to their children. And their poor children are being brainwashed and indoctrinated in our schools. And if you can't start, if you can't change that, and you cannot change it through the system, you can't change it by going into the school system and try to change the curriculum to go back to the foundations of our founding. Because the teachers all came out of liberal colleges. The parents are part of the indoctrination. We're probably 3 generations into the indoctrination of socialism. And if you remember
That's what Charlotte Isherby says. 34, the Carnegie Institute, they had the plan to create a planned economy in this country and take us, and they were going to do it through the school systems. No question.
Sure. And Hitler knew exactly what he was doing when he took over the what was it, Hitler's youth. You get them at a young age, and you can from birth, you can literally make a person into a Hitler with the proper training. In any event,
what you just said is the most important thing and concept out of everything you said, I believe. And coming to the realization of that and what school is, you know, all the time people ask me, well, I don't know what to do. What can we do? And we'll ask some of the best minds on this in the country. They will invariably point to the school system as you have. And what I would say to people is, look, I know as unpopular as this may sound, as hard as this may sound, here's what I'm saying. This is not what Ron's saying. This is what I'm saying. If you do not take a hard, hard look at removing your children from government schools, then you have not done your job to change the way things are. Because if you ever tried to pour water and fill up a colander, a strainer, have you ever tried to fill a strainer with water? right? The water goes right out faster than you can fill it. And no matter what little work that you do, no matter what effort, this is the problem with America. All the people like Ron who have done so much, they are pouring water into a strainer. If we do not separate ourselves from Roman Caesar schools, what in the world do you think you're going to get after 14 years of your child there? That is at least half the problem with this country, ladies and gentlemen. So any discussion about solutions starts there. Go ahead. A couple more minutes, Ron. Anything you want to address?
Well, just a quick brief thing on Narlo's Rural Landowner Handbook. For all you rural landowners out there, if you're looking for information, this comes on a USB flash drive. It's got three videos, and it's loaded with resource material like adverse possession, and all kinds of things that a rural landowner should know. And they are also available. This handbook is available on the website.
Very good. And I'm definitely getting one of those signs, or at least I think I need two or three of those signs, actually. I'm going to get those. They're really nice. They're metal. They cost a little bit, but they'll last. I mean, you know, this isn't no Walmart $5 thing that's going to blow away the first good wind that comes. I mean, this is really nice. Joyce had one of these on her property. Every time I drove up to her house, it was right there on the front of her gate as you go up to drive up to her house.
Can I give you a quick story? Just a quick one.
Sure.
I was up in the mountains, up in the Cascade Mountains up above Seattle, and we were looking for a river to fish, and we went down this road, and here was one of our signs posted in 2005. So it was still readable and still going strong.
Very good. They're super nice. Any other comment? We got about 30, 45 seconds. It's been a real pleasure having you on, Ron. Narlo.org is the website.
It's been a pleasure as well because our articles only get out so far, and being able to relay what we've learned and what we're trying to pass on to a larger audience is we are deeply grateful for that opportunity.
Well, we're going to take a couple of your articles, and we'll post them up. Catherine, make sure you put a couple of his articles on the website so people can get it and share it. Maybe we'll put it in the news blast. Ron, you're a hero. You're a hero for what you're doing and standing up. I mean, this is Founding Father stuff, ladies and gentlemen. This is going. Heroes like this are going on all around us, and we don't see them or appreciate them, and they don't make the difference that they should. It's because we're pouring water into a sieve.